Welcome back.
Announcements for today. Based on our conversation last class, I made some changes to the schedule. We'll talk about those in a minute. I'll open up the course webpage. I also want to mention T-Invoice course evaluation is now open. I request that everybody go on and fill that out. Your feedback is very important. Continuing to refine the course, change things every time I get to teach this one. So here, what you thought of the content, what you thought of the course overall. So please fill that out and give me your honest feedback. I appreciate it. Okay, on schedule. Get smaller. Do that from here. So here's what I'm thinking. I moved the TBC testing report back to the last day of class, December 3rd, and then moved the final exam to beginning Friday, December 7th, and being due by December 14th. How do people feel about that? Any dissenting opinions?
Is that the last day for grades?
No. That'll give me the weekend to grade everything.
So really the last day would be December 21st?
No. Grades are due before then. Okay. And the last day will be December 14th. Okay. So grades are due the 18th at like 8 a.m., so this is pretty much as far as I can push it. Right? We'll have to actually just grade everything over the weekend. Okay. Any issues with this? Okay. Well, we'll take that as a plan for now. If you have any issues, you don't want to voice, let me know by email or by stopping by my office if there's any problems with this that I haven't thought about. Not. We will hop in where we left off, which was talking about these switch capacitor converters. Went through generically charging from a voltage source, current source, and resonant charging. Derived the losses and energy transfer in each of those. And some comparison between them, showing that charging from a voltage source, it's going to be kind of our least efficient option under some assumptions of how we actually let this operate, including that we allow the charging to complete when we do this voltage source type charging. We have a charging time much longer than the time constant of the system, which allows the voltage to settle out, full transfer between V1 and V2. Then if we charge with a constant current or a resonant type current, we should end up with much lower losses based on this assumption that we have a long charging time relative to the dynamics of the system, that both current source and resonant charging depended on that RC over TC, which we assume is a very small ratio. And we then went back to our 2-to-1 switch cap converter, which we had previously just kind of intuitively argued that this is a 2-to-1 converter, but now we can apply the results in this case that we got from that voltage source charging to actually get a non-idealized model of this. What we've done now is we've included the effect of losses from this voltage source capacitor chart. Okay. Didn't include things like COSS loss or any potential for other overlap loss or things from the switches. But we included this loss mechanism, which should be the bulk of the losses here. It has to do with the current flow through it. In the voltage source capacitor case, it turns out that the resistance doesn't matter. So we've already got any kind of conduction losses in there. It should be really the dominant loss mechanism of this type of converter over most designs. And near the end of class, we took these equations. We said, well, when I apply my analysis from before, get these equations where my power is really my loss dictated by the C fly FS term. That looks like some resistance. Take these equations and put them in an equivalent circuit model. It looks like this, where I've got some DC transformer with an effective turns ratio that's doing my step down, step up conversion. And then some resistance that looks like some factor times 1 over C fly FS. And this model, to the extent that I just described it, is going to be general to switch cap converters. Okay? What's going to change for different topologies of switch cap is what is the conversion ratio here and what is the scale factor out in front of the 1 over C fly FS. Okay? But we're generally going to be able to model them this way. And the conclusions we can draw from that is that, well, our losses come from this thing, and that thing is inversely proportional to C fly and FS. So if I want lower losses, I want bigger capacitors and faster switching frequency. And it makes sense with our earlier analysis where we said, okay, this voltage source capacitor charging can be highly efficient if I've got large voltage and small ripple, right? So both of those things are tending towards smaller ripple on the capacitor, bigger capacitance and switching faster. Okay, so a couple comments I want to add here before I move past this. So general switch cap model that includes the effect of charge sharing loss, it's loss that's generated from switching capacitors and with voltage sources. It's going to look like voltage source, DC transformer, output resistance, where the turns ratio 1 to n and the value of this resistance or not goes to 1 over CFS times some, call it K. This K and N are dictated by analysis of the individual topology, but things are going to reduce down to an equivalent circuit that looks like this. Model it as a conversion ratio and output resistance. And these trends are going to hold. You use bigger capacitors, use faster switching frequency, this resistance is going to drop. Then both of these are going to apply over kind of a limited range, right? And there are a few things that will limit this. So large C fly, so eventually that may be a size problem, go up to just gigantic physical capacitors, maybe we can't accommodate that in our system. Large FS, have larger gate charge loss, larger COSS losses, requirements on our modulator that maybe we can't do the gigahertz and have any kind of control over it. There's the practical ones, but the additional one specific to this is that we have T sub C needing to be much, much greater than tau for our analysis that we've applied to work, meaning the capacitor fully charges. Both of these make this less true, right? T sub C is our charging time. Depending on the topology, that could be some fraction of the switching period. For everything that we've looked at so far, it's just half of the switching period. So this would be half the switching period, one half, 1 over FS, much, much greater than tau, which is R times C fly in this case. So large FS is going to make the left side smaller. Large C is going to make the right side bigger. Both of the things are going to make this inequality less true. Right? We keep getting bigger capacitors and switch faster. Eventually, this is no longer going to hold, and this analysis isn't going to apply. We'll look at what happens when it no longer is valid in three slides. Okay. Before we do that, I just want to look at the operation of this 2-to-1 converter with some of the other charging mechanisms that we've examined. So on this one, I'm going to do the current loaded 2-to-1 switch cap converter, which is to say I'm going to put an inductance here, which is a filter element that's going to give me a constant IL. But I'm still going to operate this the same way I did before, where I switch these two devices on for half the period, and then the other two devices on for half the period. I'm going to put the same equivalent circuit over here. I've got the C-fly in series, then C-fly down here shunt, the output filter for half the period alternatively. If I operate like that, then I can solve for the energy losses of this circuit using our previous result. So I'm going to have my energy loss is the energy lost in the capacitor charging from a current source in my first subinterval, and the energy lost in the capacitor charging from a current source in my second subinterval. And both of those energies we've already solved. So I'm going to go back here. We did the analysis of earth force charging a capacitor, derive this expression for the total energy loss. Based on how I'm going to manipulate this, I'm going to go one step back in our derivation and use this expression. It's just going to simplify things a little bit. Okay? All we did here was replace I with our C in time. I'm going to jump back to this one. 1/2 C times 2 IR V2 minus V1. Okay, so 1/2 C times 2 IR V2 minus V1. One of these intervals, so say in the first subinterval when both of these are on, the current here is going to charge the capacitor. It's going to charge it from V1 to V2 with the current I. That I will be IL. And R is whatever resistance is seen in series with the capacitor. Kind of on resistance of both of these devices, any ESR of the capacitor, any resistance of the inductor, all the resistance in that path. So that's in subinterval one. Subinterval two, I'll turn on these two devices. This capacitor will now have this IL flowing through it in the opposite direction, negative direction. And I'll have some resistance in series that'll be on these two, ESR, resistance of the inductor. All the devices are matched, it's gonna be the same resistance. Still two are on, ESR, inductor resistance, either way. Okay, so then that second interval, it'll look like 1/2 C times 2 negative IL R, and then it'll charge from V1 to V2. At the moment, I don't know what these voltages are necessarily, but I know that in steady state, capacitor is going to go from some voltage to another one, and then it's got to make it back before the end of the period, otherwise I'm not in steady state. If it went from V1 to V2, then it's going to have to go from V2 back to V1 in the next half period to be in steady state, right? Okay, because of that, these negative signs are going to cancel, and these are both really the same thing, right? So I'll end up with, let's call it two of these. So I have C times 2 IL R V2 minus V1. Hey, I'm going to rearrange and I'm just going to put this C at the end. And then I'm going to say this term here, C times the delta V on the capacitor, is the total charge that was supplied to that capacitor. So that's my delta Q. And I can say that Q is equal to CV. I can also say that it's equal to the integral of the current that flowed through the capacitor over that period, which in this case, it's always got this current IL flowing through it. So it's going to look like IL times the length of the period, which is TS over 2. Makes sense so far. So if I plug that in, get 2ILR times ILTS over 2. 2s will cancel. This is IL squared R times TS. Look familiar? Should. It's just the conduction loss of this thing. IL squared times the whatever resistance that inductor current is flowing through. Same thing in the derivation.
And yeah. R is the capacitor resistance.
So R, it's a good point. Let's call this, I'm going to rename this to R out and say the R that we're talking about is whatever resistance is in the conduction path. In this circuit, should be something like 2R on plus resistance of the inductor plus ESR, the capacitor, anything that's in these charging loops of the current flow through. Okay, so no surprise in this overall loss mechanism. It just looks like now basically a PWM converter. In fact, when we have operation like this, switch cap converter, where we no longer have any condition where I short a cap to another cap or short a cap to a voltage source, no longer have any of this charge sharing type energy transfer. This really is just a special case of a PWM converter, and this is the three-level buck, right? This topology. That's a special case just by adding one inductor in any switch capacitor topology. We can't guarantee that every single switching transition results in only capacitors being charged by currents. We'll look at some later, but in more complex topologies, I may put an inductor and kind of half of my switching transitions, half of my caps are charged by an inductor at a constant current, but half switch in series are in parallel with the voltage source and still have this charge sharing type loss. Okay. This one specifically, there is no longer any voltage source straight to cap parallel type energy transfer, no longer any of these spikes and exponential decays in current. And it is just now become a PWM topology, which is a three-level buck. Operation in this way, where I have these two devices on for half the period and these two devices on for half the period, results in a nice, really small ripple fixed 2-to-1 conversion ratio. But now I can change the duty cycle, it'll change the volt seconds on the inductor and actually regulate the output. So I, you know, do have regulation in this thing, do PWM type regulation. I could not do before adding that inductor. So that's my current loaded three-level buck. The other one we'll just kind of mention briefly, resonant implementation in this 2-to-1 switch cap converter. Things are going to fall out the same way. When we did our derivation of resonant charging, what we really solved is the conduction loss for a half sinusoid. We plug in it here, we're going to get back conduction loss for sinusoidal waveforms for the total losses. Put this in. I just want to mention there's a couple ways to make this thing resonant. One is to keep this same inductor, but make it a small inductance LR that'll resonate with C-fly with a resonance frequency equal to the switching frequency. Putting the inductor there will result in an ILR that is my output current. It looks something like this. With some DC component and then a rectified sine wave going here through the output. I can also put LR2 here directly in series with my flying capacitor. Then the current through ILR2 will look like a full sinusoid. I designed this to be resonant. Nice things. I'm sticking with the switch capacitor mentality. Still switching these two devices on for 50% of the period, then devices 2 and 4. It means that my switching will occur right here, or I can get ZCS natively, zero current, going through the switches as they switch. I can alter the frequency a little bit to perhaps translate that into ZBS. I get nice oscillation type behaviors out of this. Again, in this thing, either way, I have no direct charge sharing losses remaining. All of my energy transfer is through these resonant type waveforms. No longer have this whole source type cap charging, this 1/C-fly FS dependence in my losses. I can get regulation out of this thing. I'm going to do so similar to what we've looked at for AC link type converters by varying switching frequency and duty cycle and then assembling a segment of different portions of sinusoids. I can make these waveforms look more trapezoidal by putting phase shift between the top two and the bottom two and alter the waveform to get regulation out of it. Okay, questions on those two? Not, we'll move on to what I mentioned at the beginning of the lecture, which is, okay, what happens when we don't satisfy this inequality that our charging time is much greater than the time constant in our voltage source RC type charging? Okay. First, generally, let's just look back at the circuit we were considering to solve this. We had V2, switch that closes at time t is equal to zero, some equivalent resistance, and a capacitance. C, VC, R, VC if t is equal to zero, V1. Okay. So what actually happens here, VC of t is greater than zero is what started V1, and then it's going to eventually go to minus t over RC, V2 with this exponential rise depending on RC. Reason I want charging time much greater than RC is that'll make this term become really small. My voltage on the cap will go to V1 plus V2 minus V1, which is just V2, will end up at its final destination. How much greater than RC does T actually have to be for this to get pretty close? I'm just going to look at a couple of cases here. So I'm going to look at V sub C and the current in the capacitor, I sub C. And to abstract from how I actually change time constant, I'm going to normalize this by I peak. so that it'll always start at a value of 1. If I didn't do that, then as I change the total charging time or time constant would depend, did I make the resistance big or the capacitance big? Here, I'm just going to normalize so that I can plot them on the same axis without having to talk about, am I increasing R or C?
Okay.
Look, charging over a time T sub C. And I want my voltage to go from V1 to V2.
My normalized current should go from 1 and decay down to 0.
So if my inequality holds and my time is much greater than time constant, I should get waveforms that look like this and this. Here's my PC much greater than tau. What I'm going to look at is, what is my ratio T sub C over tau versus the final value of the capacitor voltage divided by V2.
So if I have this many time constants, I get to this percent of the final value of the voltage.
Actually, this should be V2 minus V1 for the numbers.
So I'm going to say the percent of the actual change in voltage that should happen over this time.
So if T sub C is much greater than tau, kind of go infinity, this is 100%.
That's approached by the case that I drew here.
Okay. In between, T sub C is equal to tau, we should get 63% of the way there. T sub C is 3 tau. Get 95% of the way there. It's 1/2, 39%. It's 1/10, get 9.5%. Here on my waveforms, if T sub C is equal to tau, what I'm going to get is something that looks like this. And a current does something like this. At this point, the switch turns off and it drops to 0. And my extreme case, if T sub C is 1/10 of tau, I'll get something that looks like this. My current can also fall about 10% of the way there.
So the assumptions that we used in solving this circuit previously said, I don't really care exactly what the time constant is. All I care is that I eventually make it to V2 or close enough to be well approximated as my final voltage is V2. In that case, I know that whatever the current does, it had some total charge that was transferred, and then I can solve all my energy based on that total charge. Okay. If that inequality doesn't hold, my voltage doesn't make it all the way to V2, I no longer have this fixed amount of charge, and the losses and dynamics of this thing are going to change. How are they going to change? Well, in the extreme, this purple case here, I have so little of this exponential that it almost looks like just a fixed current over the entire period. Right? Almost just a square wave drops 9.5%. I have very little deviation in voltage and almost a fixed current the whole period.
So it's going to look more or less just like a constant current instead of this exponential decaying current. And results are going to mirror what would happen if the converter was actually loaded by a constant current. In the literature, we name these the slow and fast switching limits. Okay?
So SSL, or the slow switching limit, is when T sub C is much greater than tau.
And I have a fixed delta V, I have a fixed charge, I can go through and solve everything according to that.
The fast switching limit is the opposite. T sub C is much, much less than tau.
That would be, for example, this purple case, I now have more or less just a constant current over the entire period. How did I get here? Well, here by either increasing RC, one or the other, or both of them, so that my time constant was much longer, or increasing the switching frequency so that my effective charging time was a smaller portion. And on this blue one was our slow switching limit. If I had a time constant or a charging time, just this small portion at the beginning of the period, it would still look like more or less a constant current. So if I start increasing switching frequency more and more and more, I'm going to decrease this T sub C, my subinterval time, and eventually my operation is going to change from slow switching limit to fast switching limit. That's our limitation back here to why we can't just keep making switching frequency faster and capacitance larger, making the losses smaller and smaller until they're negligible. At some point, this model will no longer apply, which is built on the idea that we are in the slow switching limit. At some point, we'll transition into this fast switching limit. So we have fully solved this out. We're going to look at the behavior in the fast switching limit because it's constant current. It's going to be pretty simple to look at on the next slide. And then we're just going to kind of connect the two and talk about what happens in between these two. These are really asymptotic limits, right? So for much greater than and much less than tau, we should be well modeled by these two. T sub C in the vicinity of tau, it's going to be kind of a combination of both. This yellow line, not constant current, and it doesn't decay down to zero. It's somewhere in between. So looking back at our 2-to-1 switch cap converter and modeling it, if we change the design of it such that it's running in the fast switching limit, what's going to happen? Okay. We're still going to have the same two subintervals here and here. The difference is going to be that our duration that we spend in each of these subintervals is much shorter than the RC dynamics of this capacitor and whatever resistance is in this loop. So the current here is going to be more or less constant over the period. Have charge balance, steady state approximation still apply. I'm going to have some current going through this cap that's more or less constant over all of this subinterval. The next subinterval, the cap is going to discharge with a constant current to the output. These constant currents times their times have to be equal and opposite such that the capacitor stays in steady state.
So what that's going to look like is, look at I sub C fly. First subinterval, it's going to get charged. And it's going to have some very minor exponential decay and a more or less neglect. And the second subinterval, it's going to get discharged. Some exponential decay. And then end of TS. So if I'm deep in the fast switching limit, I'm going to approximate this as just a square wave. Where it's got some value for the first half of the period, some current, some value for the second half of the period, some negative current. And I know that if I'm in steady state, this area and this area have to be equal so that I don't deliver any net charge to this capacitor over the period. Otherwise, its voltage would be changing period to period. So I know that these two currents are the same if I'm switching a 50% duty cycle. So this is some I, this is some negative I, it's called I fly.
Okay. Just half charge balance applies always for periodic steady state. So what does that look like? It looks like exactly what we'd have if I had an inductor at the output and a constant current. Have IL and minus IL going through this capacitor. And as it turns out, the model is going to be the same, but can not use that information and derive it otherwise. What I'm going to say is, okay, what is this current dictated by?
Well, when I'm in the fast switching limit, two things happen. One, the current stays more or less constant at its peak value, and the voltage stays more or less constant at its initial value.
As we are deep down where we have some fraction of one time constant, our percent change in the voltage is going to be very small.
So I'm going to have some amount of ripple, but it should be very small in VC fly. Get another color. VC fly should look more or less something like this. And it's approximately
just a constant value. Only has less than 10% of the ripple it would have had in the slow switching limit case. So then I can figure out what this current is under the approximation that VC fly is constant.
Looking at my subinterval equivalent circuits, so if I again hop back here,
the first subinterval,
say in both, I put my resistance in here. That's some R.
It's going to be the same R that we talked about previously, two devices, cap. Now no inductor. Then what is the current that's going through C fly? If I approximate C fly as constant, approximate the output as constant, and the input is constant, then it's just VG minus VC fly minus V over R in this interval. Current through it here is VC fly minus V over R. In both cases, that current is the output current. Right here, current goes through C fly to the output, cap and parallel resistor. Here, it's the negative C fly current goes to the output.
So I'm going to use that and write an expression for my output power. P out is equal to V times. In subinterval one, it was VG minus VC fly minus V over R.
The current that went through to the output multiplied by the output voltage to get the output power.
That happens for, let's call it T1 over TS. This is T1. This is T2.
Plus whatever energy I get in the second period, which was this
VC fly minus V over R times T2 over TS. where, based on what I said here, T1 is equal to T2 is equal to TS over 2.
Switch a 50% duty cycle and half my time in each period.
I plug that in. I'm going to pull my R out. So V over R times what I have left in here.
T1 over TS and T2 over TS both become 1/2. And then I'm going to have 1/2 times VG, 1/2 times minus V plus 1/2 times minus V. So I'll get a full V out of that. And then I'm going to have different signs on VC fly here times 1/2. So those will cancel each other out.
I'll have VG over 2 minus V. So what does that look like? Let me perhaps make it more clear, rewrite it in this way. VG over 2 minus V over R.
Like an output voltage, the current flowing through it, it looks like half the input voltage minus the output voltage on the resistor.
How could I sketch that? It's R, VG over 2 minus V. That is the output current.
Flows into the output voltage V to give me my output power.
And again, I can complete this model by saying, how do I get this VG over 2? That comes from my 2-to-1 step down conversion, is my general model from the input voltage.
Looks very similar to what we had when we were in the slow switching limit case. What's the difference is now this output resistance is just equal to the actual resistance in the charging path of the circuit.
What we got last time, this was R out
was some fraction times 1/C fly Fs. So this resistance really depended on capacitance and switching frequency. That holds true as long as our charging time is much greater than the dynamics. If this inequality is violated, R out is no longer dependent on the capacitance and switching frequency. It is
building for impact ready
just R, no frequency dependence anymore. Okay.
So have control back, no. Nothing. Try this. There we are.
So what does this overall look like?
Okay. So R out. Oh no, really? Okay, R out, we're going to try to write this quick before this fails again, versus log of switching frequency, the magnitude of my output resistance of the circuit. I've got two different asymptotes now. It looks like just whatever my series resistance is in the conduction path in my fast switching limit And it looks like 1 over 4 is 1 over C fly FS in my slow switching limit. This slow switching limit is my fast switching limit.
Down here, for a given implementation, that low switching frequency implies long periods, long subinterval times. My inequality will hold, and I'm going to follow this trend, where as I go up in frequency, my output resistance decreases. So I'm incentivized to continue increasing the switching frequency to get the losses down. At some point, however, I'm going to reach a fast enough switching frequency so that inequality no longer holds, and I'm going to transition towards this asymptotic behavior where I just have a constant resistance equal to the actual resistance of my circuit. Going up in switching frequency doesn't help me anymore. Okay, so the actual behavior of the circuit is going to follow this behavior at low frequency, this behavior at high frequency, and then in the middle, it's going to do something that we haven't analyzed. And this looks on a log-log plot a lot like Bode plots, frequency domain, right? We got a minus 20 and then a flat, and we know, okay, that comes from sum of real and imaginary numbers, and get the square root of the sum of the squares, and it should be 3 dB above. But that's not true here, formally, okay? Now this is not something that just pops up because I have 1 over S plus something. Instead, this comes from two really different behaviors. And to look at the actual behavior in here, I'd have to look at, okay, this exponential decays at a certain rate, and as I'm close to tau, I can neither approximate that as constant current nor as fully decaying. So I can't conclude this is just 3 dB above, formally. Informally, that's what people do, okay? So it turns out to be an okay approximation to just in here. Connect this and say R out is approximately square root of, we'll call RSSL squared plus RFSL squared. We'll call this RFSL and this RSSL. And that sort of expression would mean the 3 dB. Okay. That's an approximation. It's not actually truly valid, but people have done the calculation and said, yeah, it's pretty close. Okay, where does this happen? This break point here is when R is equal to 1 over 4 C fly FS. I don't actually have any imaginary numbers in here. The magnitudes are just what they are. Okay. That's going to be at a switching frequency, FS is equal to 1 over 4 C fly R. My T sub C, my charging time, is half the switching frequency in this convert, or half the switching period. Excuse me. So FS is 1 over TS, and TC is FS over 2. So that's going to give me 1 over TS is equal to 2 over T sub C is equal to 1 over 4 C fly times R, which means this occurs at, cancel a 2 here, T sub C equal to 2 C fly R, which is 2 tau. So that's this break point here. Let's call it F crit. And in that range, about 2 tau, have some 80-90% of the transition done, but not close enough to say I've completely ended that exponential. I'm definitely not far enough away to say it's a constant term. Okay, so what does this imply about the operation of this thing? From purely looking at these losses before I start considering COSS and QG and other mechanisms, means I would like to, for a given implementation, increase the switching frequency up until the point where I get in this range. I'm switching down here. Increasing the switching frequency a little bit is going to give me a significant reduction in losses. Since I keep going, my losses are going to drop and drop. As I start to transition into this fast switching limit type behavior, I no longer get any benefit from higher switching frequency. And there's these things we haven't put into this model, but we know about from previously in the course, that my COSS losses are going to go up, my QG losses are going to go up, and I have other problems. Okay? So I'd like to design and push things up into this range, either by increasing the switching frequency or alternatively increasing capacitance, allowing larger resistance perhaps. But doing so will get me towards a better implementation up until I hit that break point of changing an operating mode. Okay. That's all we have time for. Thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you Monday.